Welcome to RHRealityCheck.org's RealityCast, where we inject truth into the sex and reproductive health debate. Each week, we'll be bringing you news, opinion, and advice on sexual health issues, as well as interviews with some of the most prominent names in sexual health advocacy. Here's your host, Amanda Marcotte.
This week on RealityCast, we'll have an interview with a clinical psychologist on how the right wing exploits paranoia and anxiety in our culture to advance their agenda. Also, more election coverage, and the Today Show begrudgingly admits that men have sexual health concerns. But they're going to laugh those concerns off, of course. If you've been wondering what's up with the Midwest Teen Sex Show, and I know you have if you have any taste at all, then you'll be pleased to know that they're still around and working now for Coldcast TV. Their latest episode was on fetishes.
For example, if you can only get off by dressing as a lightning bug and hearing the word flapjack, you have a fetish. If you get turned on at the thought of jello shots during sex, you just have a kink and have spent too much time at the frat.
You can find their new episodes at coldcast.tv. You know, there's two ways to conduct a conversation in this country about reproductive and sexual health. There's the grown-up way, where it's understood that sexuality is a normal part of life and the discussion is over how to best minimize risks and maximize the benefits. Then there's the silly, childish way, which is to stoke people's anxieties about sex and turn the entire discussion into a big game of gotcha. Considering that now is the campaign season, dubbed by political watchers as the silly season, guess which form of discussion is dominating the airwaves? If you guess that it's all silly season all the time, pat yourself on the back. I think that a useful conversation about reproductive health could be had in this country, but right now I can't help but think that most media coverage, at least related to electoral politics, is about creating a distraction. Like Tom Brokaw interviewing Nancy Pelosi, where the whole Catholic thing comes up.
There are those who've decided...
The Catholic Church at the moment feels very strongly that it begins at the point of conception.
And this is like maybe 50 years or something like that. So again, over the history of the church, this is an issue of controversy. But it is also true that God has given us, each of us, a free will and a responsibility to answer for our actions. And we want abortions to be safe, rare, and we reduce the number of abortions. That's why we have this fight in Congress over contraception. My Republican colleagues do not support contraception. If you want to reduce the number of abortions, and we all do, you must. It would behoove you to support family planning and contraception, you would think.
You know, I can't put the blame on Brokaw for how this interview went off the rails. He asked about choice, and Pelosi immediately brought up that she's a believing Catholic. At what point, she tried to imply that the whole thing is more confusing than it is in Catholic theology, which means that all the anti-feminist nuts out there went even more nuts. Once you get into the whole religion thing, people start to think that they can bait you into saying that your church's particular dogma should be law or that you're a hypocrite. Instead of getting into silly season stuff like discussing theology on a political program, I suggest that Pelosi defend religious freedom. In this country, people have a right to believe what they want, and they have a right to disagree with the church they belong to. Most Catholics do. Like Pelosi, 58% of Catholics are pro-abortion rights. And like Pelosi, more than three-quarters would like to see more support for contraception access. The silly season stuff continues, with the media continuing to exploit both the horror of late-term abortion and a general misogyny in order to deflect attention from the real conversations about the real issues during this election season. Witness Mike Pintek on The War Room with Quinn and Rose promoting the paranoid right-wing meme about Obama and infanticide.
And Barack Obama said that the beginning of human life was above his pay grade. Kind of a weird answer, a puzzling answer, an evasive answer, until you realize why he said that. What he didn't want you to know is that he believes so firmly in abortion, he is so radical in his support for abortion and infanticide, that he believes that if a woman chooses abortion, she's entitled to a dead body no matter what.
Now, the women he's slurring here are women that aborted very much wanted pregnancies because the pregnancies went wrong and had to be terminated for safety. But beyond that, think about what he's saying here. He's accusing women as a group of being bloodthirsty maniacs who get pregnant for the opportunity to see a dead body. Never mind that the vast majority of abortions are done too early in the pregnancy to produce anything even comparable to a human body. The point is that he thinks women as a group are inhuman monsters. That this kind of unblinking hatred for women is what is passing for political opinion in this country is frightening. The Democratic National Convention resulted, unsurprisingly, in confrontational protest between anti-choicers and people trying to resist them. I appreciate the people who show up to resist them, but good God, watching the footage gave me a headache.
We say to the Democratic Party, stand up for the most hopeless, the ones with no voice in our society. Turn from your radical abortion ways.
One of the first protests of the convention was decidedly unradical. There were police and some dissenters.
I don't agree with that. I think it's a woman's right to choose.
Not effective.
But no violence. Protesters placed roses along the perimeter of the Pepsi Center, each one meant to send a strong message to the Democratic Party.
The protest is nauseating. They have all these people kneeling by a fence, and the teenage girls are crying. I can't think of a better symbol for the silly season than someone weeping over an imaginary person while real people die in war and from healthcare crises every day. I'd like to welcome Dr. Bryant Welch to the program. Bryant is a clinical psychologist and the author of the new book, State of Confusion, Political Manipulation and the Assault on the American Mind, an examination of right-wing propaganda tactics and how they work. Thanks for coming on to RealityCast, Bryant.
It's my pleasure.
The descriptions of your book make reference to the classic movie Gaslight, and you call right-wing pundits and activists gaslighters. Can you explain what that means?
Sure. What I'm saying in State of Confusion is that basically a lot of the political tactics and political forms of communication that we now have really enable the political forces to construct an alternative reality for people. And when people are confused, perplexed as to what is real, that's extremely distressing and makes them very, very anxious. And because we all need to have a reality sense that we can believe in, we become very dependent upon powerful other people who will tell us what's real and what's not real. And this is what I think has really happened with a lot of the effectiveness of the right wing in America. And it's dangerous because the more people succumb to those kinds of tactics, the more there is a psychological dumbing down or regression, as we say in the field. And a state of confusion is really my attempt to explain how that regression has taken place and why it's really undermining America's ability to make effective decisions, whether it's in Iraq, whether it's with respect to our economy, with respect to our schools, our infrastructure. And the more it progresses, the harder it's going to be for us to dig our way out of that pit.
Can you give some examples of the kind of unreality that you're discussing?
Sure. Let's take a look at, for example, Bush's axis of evil. After the fall of the Soviet Union, we no longer had a way to organize in an organized fashion. To know where our enemies were. And when 9/11 came along, we were given it was a profoundly frightening experience for America. It was, with the exception of Pearl Harbor, it was really one of the few times that our national boundaries had been violated. And when that happens, you have people looking desperately to find who the enemy is, where is he located, and what can we do about it. Now, when Bush came along with his axis of evil, it satisfied that psychological need. The problem was it was absurd. Iran and Iraq had been, as you know, locked in a 10-year battle in which there were over a million casualties. And the idea that Iran and Iraq were part of an axis of evil organized in a conspiracy against the United States and that they were in an allegiance with North Korea, which, as we all know, is so paranoid that it would be very difficult for them to form an alliance with anyone. It was preposterous. But we organized our worldview in that way because it gave us a semblance of knowing what was what. It made things clear and simple. And so people bought into it. And the implications for America and the world have been just staggering.
It's my sense, as someone who works in reproductive rights, that sexual paranoias, especially around female sexuality, seem to be on the rise lately in this country. Do you think that is, and what's going on there?
In state of confusion, I describe three particularly problematic psychological states. And one of them is sexual perplexity. And the question you're asking puts your finger right on that issue. Our sexual identity, our gender, and our sexual identification is crucial. It's like the scaffolding around which we create much of our personality. And if some aspects of our sexual identity are called into question, our masculinity, our femininity, and the clear lines about how we define those things, it will make us very, very anxious. So if you want to distract someone from political issues, like quality of schools for kids, peace, the health care for the country, if you start raising an issue that makes people anxious in their sexual identity area, for example, same-sex marriage, that will, for many Americans, make them so anxious that everything else drops by the wayside in terms of importance. And as, for example, happened in Ohio in 2004, you're going to have these subtle shifts in voting patterns that people will be more focused on which party seems to be identified with the policy that will resolve, or they think will resolve, their sexual perplexity. So that is, when you talk about sexual perplexity in state of confusion, that is one of the three big areas that I focus on in trying to explain to people how we're being manipulated into avoiding the critical issues that are really confronting us and being distracted by largely irrelevant issues at the polls.
How does jealousy and envy factor into the right-wing noise machine message?
Well, I've referred recently, and I talk about that in State of Confusion as well. I think envy, you know, we say money is the mother's milk of politics, and I think envy is the petroleum. The way negative campaigning works, and I outline it in some detail in State of Confusion, envy is we all have a lot of unmet wishes and needs, some more than others. And all of the unmet needs we have are we keep in a reservoir of frustrations and resentments. Now, it's not very hard to trigger off those resentments. If you look at the current advertisements that are being used against Obama, with the celebrity status ads, the progressive forces in this country are laughing at those and thinking they're silly. They are not. They are profoundly sophisticated political ads that are very dangerous to Obama. If you show Obama getting adulation all around the world, we'd all like to be adored in that fashion. So in the first step of those ads, it triggers off our envy. But the second step is when you lower the hammer on him by saying, you know what, he doesn't deserve it. And once you tell people that the person who has what they don't have doesn't deserve it, it justifies them unleashing in a self-righteous, moralistic way, a lot of rage at that person. So what you do is you first of all generate the envy, and then you give people a self-righteous, moralistic rationale for venting it. And that is what drives almost every negative campaign ad if you look carefully at it. So I've said that envy and sexual perplexity are two of the three big problems, and paranoia that we talked about in the context of the Iraq war is the third one. And when you manipulate people in those areas, as Karl Rove has been a genius at doing, you really can very quickly enthrall them, and you begin to own them politically.
What I find interesting about paranoia is that used to be kind of the dominant emotion of like the fringe right wing, you know, in the 1960s with the John Birchers. How has that become so mainstream?
Well, that's a very good question. You know, Bill Moyers said not too long ago that the thing that's different about the present time is that the radical fringe is running the country, and he's right. But your question acknowledges the fact that we have become a lot more paranoid as a country. And I spend a lot of time in State of Confusion talking about what paranoia really is. It's not just an irrational fear. It's not just a fear that the bad guy is going to, the boogeyman is going to get us. It's a specific kind of fear, and it has to do with the safety and security we feel at our borders or boundaries. It is it's the sensitivity with which we approach the world. If we are too sensitive, we're terrified and everything feels aversive. If we're not sensitive enough, we come across as obtuse and unaware of what's going on around us. Now, 9/11 was like having a sharp dagger in our eye, and it just scared the bejesus out of Americans because it was a violation of our boundaries in a way that most of us in our lifetime had never had our boundaries violated that way. If you think about it, if you look at World War II, Roosevelt and many Americans were trying to get America to enter the war against Hitler because there was a madman marching across Europe. Well, we weren't, and he wasn't able to do that until Japan attacked us. So it was being attacked by Japan that let us mobilize for war. And I think it's because Japan, the attack on Pearl Harbor, was an assault on our boundaries that jarred us like nothing else could. So paranoia is a serious boundary violation, and it scares people to death. It's also one of the reasons that we're so resented in the Middle East. We have military bases right inside the country, in many countries in the Middle East. Now, if you think, how would we feel if the Saudis, for example, had military bases in Colorado, Ohio, and New York, it would make us very, very anxious. And of course, that's what we're doing over there. But because we don't appreciate what paranoia really is, it's hard for us to empathize with what the effect of that policy is in the Middle East. And as a result, we keep doing it. And then when they howl in pain and respond, we're shocked. But we have got to understand that. Now, if we want to go in there anyway, fine. But we darn well better know that when you plant a military base in someone else's country, it is the equivalent of sticking a sharp stick in their eye.
This sounds absolutely fascinating, and the book is called State of Confusion, and our author is Dr. Bryant Welch. Thanks so much for coming on to RealityCast, Dr. Welch.
Thank you, man. Appreciate it.
Full disclaimer, I loathe the site Ask Men as a general rule. It's incredibly sexist, and they're fond of running articles that presume that women are the second sex, some great, incomprehensible, over-demanding other. So when I saw that the Today Show interviewed two editors at Ask Men about a survey about sex and relationships that the site conducted, I was expecting something really terrible, but I was pleasantly surprised. Interestingly, the hosts on the Today Show seemed very disappointed to find that men and women weren't very different after all. But what I really liked was not only did the survey look just past sexual customs and sexual stereotypes, but they actually tackled sexual health. And so I have to offer some praise to Ask Men for this. They have a large male audience, and while they usually exploit that audience with sexist stereotypes, this time they stepped up to the plate and offered a real service in raising male awareness of sexual health issues. Here's number one.
Surprising.
Yeah, okay. So if a male pill were available, mm-hmm. would you ask your husband slash boyfriend to take it? 62% of the women said yes, and 51% of the men responded that they would take a male version of the pill. Mm-hmm. So they just slap it down with their beer, yeah. right?
That's cool.
No big
Whatever.
Deal to a guy. Mm-hmm. Yeah. No. So do you think that's true? I mean, women have taken
okay.
on the burden of this
now,
for a
These guys are
trust. Would you trust him to do that? To take
yeah.
the pill? To remember?
These guys
I mean?
Are saying they'll do it.
With a guy you don't trust, it's a bigger problem.
No.
You know what I'm
yeah.
saying?
Bad memories.
I feel like we need to wait until it really comes
mm-hmm.
out.
Mm-hmm.
We'll do another study.
Okay.
All right.
Wow. That segment would have been perfect to show in a media criticism class. Did you see what happened there? Mainstream media types presented with strong evidence against a common sexist stereotype, and instead of adjusting their beliefs for the new evidence, they smacked it down with all these sexist stereotypes. First, the whole notion that drinking beer is a male thing, as if women don't like beer. Then there's the outright denial of what the survey found. The survey found men would like a male birth control pill, and the hosts and the Ask Men editor immediately questioned the men's honesty about that. Must preserve those stereotypes at all costs. This next clip is kind of disturbing.
Let's just see.
This one surprised a lot of people, but not really the medical community. Men were asked, have you ever taken an STD test? Okay. Now, we have Dr. Nancy Snyderman, who is with us.
Thrilled to be here with this question.
It says here, shockingly, 46% of the men said they had not taken an STD test. Nancy, is that surprising to you?
No. People don't step up to the plate to get a test for this infection if they don't have any symptoms. And men carry infections with really no symptoms, and women, unfortunately, you know, usually have the symptoms. There was a recent study out of Johns Hopkins that looked at incoming military recruits in the Army. 51% of Army recruits had a sexually transmitted infection, and most didn't know it.
Wow. So the Army doesn't test for that kind of stuff, Nancy?
Interestingly not. They say it's not cost effective, but the technology is such now that if you just urinate into a cup, doctors can check for an STI or an STD very reasonably. So there is really no cost effectiveness reason why we aren't checking for people.
Wow. Sorry, Nancy. The other worst thing is that most of them didn't want to know if they had one anyway.
Yeah, and here's why you have to care, because it is a leading cause of infertility in women. Mm-hmm. An untreated chlamydia infection can cause all kinds of scarring in the pelvis and can mm-hmm. cause untoward effects, side effects for women. Mm-hmm. So men may not care, but the women who are sleeping with them should care a lot.
I'm feeling offended at the idea that men simply don't care if they make women sick. Maybe some men, but do we really have to assume that men are, as a rule, that cold-hearted and cruel? My inclination is to think that men don't get tested for STDs as much as they should because men are socialized to think of sexual health care as something women get. After all, we have specific doctors for women's sexual health care. If I want an STD test, I go to my gynecologist. But men don't really have specific doctors like that. I'm skeptical about the claims about peeing in a cup, by the way. I checked the Mayo Clinic's website, and they still indicated that the main form of testing for chlamydia and gonorrhea was the dreaded swab inside the penis test. I hope that's getting easier. I doubt I have to really draw your attention to why men might be reluctant to have someone stick a cotton swab inside their penises, and that reluctance no doubt is contributing to the problem. And now for the wisdom of wingnuts. Talk show radio host Neil Bortz doesn't think that women on welfare are people, but in fact a form of domesticated animals.
In Georgia, welfare broodmares, that is also described as single mothers receiving public assistance, are having babies at three times the rate of mothers who do not need public assistance. If you're on welfare, 162 births per 1,000 women. If you're not on welfare, 53 births per 1,000 women. 3-1. 3-1.
I think he's mixing up cause and effect. maybe women who have children are more likely to go on welfare because they A, need it, and B, you can't get welfare unless you have kids. But that's using logic, which is Bortz's weak spot. I'm bringing this up because Bortz is one of the few wingnuts out there who believes that abortion should be legal. But he's clearly not pro-choice because he doesn't think that women should have the choice to have a baby if that's what they want. He thinks you should have to pass his test first.
That's it for this week's edition of Reality Cast. Please tune in next week for another dose of reality in the sexual health debate. Visit www.rhrealitycheck.org and sign up for our weekly e-newsletter, various news feeds, and daily emails. Thanks for listening and see you next week.